This is MSO, NewSports.com. I'm Bill Newell, and we're joined on a secret remote location by John Squires here to talk some North Shore High School football. And although the football season itself is still weeks away, the first the kickoff, so to speak, we're going to kind of do a retro kickoff here, go backwards in time. And John's a native of Swampscott, right? So I wanted to talk about some of those glory days of Swampscott High football. So when were the glory days of Swampscott High football?
Well, Billy, Swampscott really was kind of a doormat in the Northeastern Conference for many years in the 40s and 50s. In fact, they were way behind in the Thanksgiving rivalry with Marblehead. Around 1952-53, Stan Bondelevich came to town. And Stan had just broken a undefeated streak at Hudson. He was coaching at the time. He was coaching at Hudson, and Amesbury had won like 40-some-odd games, and they were a power at the time, out of the Northeastern Conference, and he knocked them off. And then he interviewed in Swampscott, got the job, followed Harold Martin, and Swampscott started taking off from there. It took him about 3 or 4 years. In 1956 and 57, they had their first undefeated teams with George Blaze, who's a Hall of Famer and one of the top five players probably ever playing Swampscott. So 56, 57 is when it started. But the real glory days in my mind, and I'm very prejudiced, of course you had Barry Gallup and Peter Cohen in 63. They were our conference champs and state champs. But around 68, 67, a gentleman by the name of Dick Geron came to town in Swampscott. And Dick Geron, who was probably the best high school football player in my estimation, next to Harry Aganis around here, that's when it really started. It started taking off in 68, went undefeated 68, 69, and then they started a streak, 32 games in a row. And Mike Lynch, ironically, was a senior. It was topped the St. John's Prep in the famous game, first blockage bomb at Swampscott. Danny Hughes from Swampscott, who was at St. John's Prep, beat the Swampscott and broke this streak. But very few people know that they won 30 games in a row after that. So basically 62 out of 63 games. So from 1968 to 1973, those were unbelievable glory days.
You know, one of the things in my earlier days at WESX, Stan was not the coach at Swampscott High School. He came back to coach, and I can remember that going over to his house prior to Thanksgiving one time. So I brought my recorder. We did a feature interview with the legendary Stan Bondelevich, and he talked about cooking Thanksgiving dinner. Now, he cooked. This is a guy, you know, at the time, of course, he was pretty much retired at the time, but tells a story about his recipes, all the things that he did on Thanksgiving Day, and it just kind of blew me away. Obviously, you still remember it to this day, is that clearly, you know, he could recount football games, and he was a master motivator with Stan Bondelevich. But yet, on the other hand, here's this guy that you look at so many other coaches, and they could not be farther away from a kitchen on Thanksgiving Day, you know, both mentally and physically. But there is Stan preparing Thanksgiving dinner, and he did it for years, apparently.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. Very few people know this about Stan, but Stan was an expert gardener, and he grew tomatoes. And if he did not have the best tomatoes in town, and he'd check all the sections and talk to all the people who grew tomatoes, he'd be upset, really was. And he's also got his doctorate in history. And people don't realize that about studying some ancient tribe down in South America. So he was really a bright individual, but he was a great motivator.
I can imagine him, you know, hearing that story, John, telling that he would go out and motivate those tomatoes.
Well, he really would. And he really got aggravated if he did not have the best tomatoes, because he'd find out why he didn't and who did. But he was just a great motivator. I mean, he really was the heart and soul of Swampscott football. He put Swampscott on the map. My senior year, of course, we had three pros, Toner and Adams and Geron. But what he prided in, he had great assistant coaches, Dick Lynch and Frank DeFelice. And it started in the junior high with Dick Connors. I can remember back in 7th and 8th grade, that was the start. He'd actually go out, Stan, and he would have one of his assistant coaches find the best young athlete in town, give him a football, and say, "You're going to be the quarterback for me someday." And 9 times out of 10, that gentleman did work out and became a great football player for Stan. So Stan got it all. He got everybody involved in town. I mean, on a Saturday around here, Billy, the town is still 13,000. There were 10,000 people at the game. They used to close the barbershops. Everything was closed down in town. It was unbelievable.
Yeah, and what's interesting is he then, another sign of a good coach, and you see it whether it be at the NFL level, the college level, or the high school level, is then your assistant coaches go on and become head coaches themselves. And so Stan, you know, had his disciples, not only in his players, but also in his coaching staff as well.
Oh, absolutely. Dick Lynch, who is, I consider, probably the best high school coach of any sport. Dick Lynch could coach Tiddlywinks and be a state champ. Frank DeFelice went on to be a Super Bowl finalist at Xaverian. Now he's set all kinds of records baseball-wise and so forth. We'll talk about him a little later. He was the only coach that had a losing record during those times. But Dick Lynch, who became an AD and built a field house over at Danvers. Billy Bush, who brought two teams to the Super Bowl. Steve Dombowski, who won a Super Bowl and brought a team to the Super Bowl. So he did have great assistants and coaches. In fact, not a lot of people know, I coached with Stan. I'm one of the few guys that played for Stan and coached with Stan. And I coached over at Fenwick with Stan, and it was really an experience because I got a whole different perspective. Because if you don't think he wanted to win and you don't think he put pressure on his assistant coaches, he was a master psychologist. He could get into anybody's head, and boy, oh boy, you better be not in his doghouse.
What was he like on the John, on the sidelines? I remember that time when he went back to Fenwick to coach over there. Sort of came out of retirement. What was he like on the sidelines to officials, to players, to his other coaches?
Well, he was the supreme politician. He did not do any coaches. Stan was not an X and O guy. He knew very little about blocking schemes and things like that. But he was a football stat man, knowing to get the best out of everybody. He got average plays to be great plays. He had a great comment. He said, during those times, Swampscott, it was a great place for great people, and he was a great motivator. During the game, Dick Lynch did all the offense. Frank DeFelice did the defense. They'd call every play. He called very little, but then afterwards, he'd tell them to back off, and then the media came in when they won. And Red Hoffman and all the Globe and all the papers used to cover us and everything. And he would just sit back, and he'd have a cigar upstairs, and he'd start to tell stories. I remember one time, seriously, I was down Cardinal Spellman. He's telling me about we had finally won some games, so we kind of relaxed and kicked back a little bit, took a little pressure off me. We're driving back from Brockton to Fenwick and Peabody, and he's telling me World War II stories. I thought I was going to stick needles in both my eyes, but you better listen to him, and you better know the answers on Monday. Come practice, because he was brutal. I'll tell you one more quick story. I grew a mustache during those days, and he was very conservative. When I was coaching with him, every day at practice, he'd get on me for my mustache. So finally, I'd had it. And Thanksgiving morning, we're playing St. Mary's, and we had just scored a touchdown. I'd called a play. I can remember the name of the play, too, but it was a trap play. But he came over to me, and he started to loosen up after being not. And he says, I said, Coach, by the way, I'm going to cut my mustache. And he says, oh, good, I'm glad you're finally going to do that. I said, for basketball, it starts Monday, I'm refereeing. He went through the ceiling. He didn't talk to me for another 2 days. But true story. But he was just a great motivator. He did very little coaching during the game, but he talked to players. If there was a problem, he'd come out, put his arm around him, motivate him, get him back in there again. I mean, he got so many players that I can't emphasize enough, and I could mention names, and I don't want to do it, but were average players, became all-league players. And then, of course, he had the great players, and he was smart enough to get Dick Geron and Tommy Toner and still some guys from Lynn over there. And Billy Adams, very few people knew, grew up in Lynn for a while. The funniest thing is Tootie Gahoon and Bobby Blood, who were great players back in the 60s for Marblehead, three-sport athletes and all-scholastics, both of those guys at one time lived in Swampscott. So my junior-senior year, you could have had Tootie Gahoon, Bobby Blood, and Dick Geron in the same backfield. But, of course, Marblehead stole them from us. But yeah. Still, that's another story for another day.
We talk about how, I think I've joked about this in the past with some coaches, but the whole being connected to the real estate angle of things, not that far-fetched sometimes.
No, it really isn't. And I'll tell you, when Dick Geron was in town, another funny story is his sophomore year, the first time he ever touched the ball, he did not play offense. The senior was playing offense ahead of him, and nobody knew the name Geron. And he played just defense, safety, but he returned punts. And we were playing Gloucester, and Gloucester was in the conference until 1966-67. And on the fourth down, they punted. It was a Friday afternoon game, I can remember. Geron caught the ball at the 10-yard line, started to the left, turned to the right, and went 90 yards for a touchdown. That was the start of his career. So that, and the funny thing was, so the following week, he's with a teacher in town. They lived in a two-family, and he's upstairs doing, the teacher's holding the ladder, and he's doing some windows. And Stan drives by, and all of a sudden turns around and comes back. He says, hey, get down below, you hold the ladder, get Roz Stone, who was 63, up and clean the windows. I don't want my halfback cleaning windows. And she did it. So that's a true story. But things like that are great.
You know, there are so many different athletes to talk about in Swampscott during those times. I think we should save that for another time. I'd like to just maybe keep focusing on Stan for a minute here in our final few moments here, because of the coaching legend that he was here on the North Shore, and that again put Swampscott football on the map. You know, you talk about the Saturday football being the event in Swampscott during that time. You know, I got a little taste of it in the sense in that years ago when I came, say, to WESX, Beverly football was Saturday afternoons, and they, you know, it was a big deal in Beverly. There's no question about it. It's still Saturday afternoons, but they've experimented with night football. It's nothing is the same as it was, you know, back then, as it is today, as it was back then. I get that piece, and that's fine. But you know that, the story in Swampscott, though, is truly a unique story in the sense that small town, big success, and like you were talking about, launched so many really great careers.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, think of the guys, Dick Geron, Tom Tomlin, Billy Adams, Mike Lynch, all those guys. But, you know, the other thing, too, is it was the buildup for the week, Billy, is that you'd have no practice on Monday. It'd be a JV game. Then you'd start to get preparation Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. Then Friday, there were many times that we had rallies at the high school. Nobody had rallies except Thanksgiving, but Stan wanted a rally, you'd have a rally. And there'd be selectmen there and everything, so at big games, and I can remember the first big game I experienced playing was when Christy Serino and Saugus, we went in, they were undefeated, Saugus was undefeated, we were undefeated, we went to Stack Bowl Field, both teams were 5-0, and Dick Geron's, the final score was Dick Geron 13 and Saugus 12. But the build-up on Saturday, and then the follow-up, and it was just, he got everybody involved. And the other thing, too, is very few times not everybody single player played. That doesn't happen nowadays. Every single player on a 55, 60-man roster got it on at least two or three plays. And that's being involved, and now the kids come back and say, I can play for the Big Blue. Getting a cert shirt, I remember a big thing. In those days, very few sophomores played on the varsity. And he carried five sophomores. Of course, drawn automatic, that was different. But what he'd do is he'd bring everybody in on a Thursday after practice and present the varsity shirt that a sophomore was going to wear the next day. And he did that to everybody that got brought up. And once you got brought up, you stayed. And I remember when I was lucky enough to have it as a sophomore, and I remember I got brought up, it was the middle of the season, we were playing Amesbury the next day, and he gave me the shirt, and I felt like $1 million. And of course, when I played the next day, I almost died because the starting safety, I was a backup, got hurt, and I'm in there with, in my first play, I intercepted a pass, I had no idea which way to run. But Stan, once again, put your arm around you, you're doing good the whole bit, but it was just so much fun, and he evolved everybody. This place was dead. If you drove through here on a sad day, like you said, morning, you'd walk down 10,000 people. I remember Thanksgiving morning, and this once again because of Stan and his program. I'd walk down 8 o'clock for a 10 o'clock game, and there were 8,000 people in the stands. I can remember walking down into the park, 8,000 people at 8:30 in the morning.
All right, maybe a final question or two. If Stan gave the pregame speech and the halftime speech, what are some elements of that speech? Because sometimes, I mean, I think great coaches might have kind of like a template that they might use. Every day, you know, they might insert something different each time, but I'm guessing that there's that template there sort of in their heads. What was Stan's sort of template, if he had one?
I'll give you two great examples. Stan was a great motivator, and he played off people's emotions, and he brought people personalities into it, so you felt like you were part of it. He knew you from the time, if you were going to play and you were an athlete, he knew you from the time you were in the third or fourth grade, okay? And many people, he knew you, he knew your family, he knew your background. My senior year, we had a great team. I think, personally, we could have gone undefeated without Geron, that's how good we were. I mean, we had Toner and some Beatrice and some great players, but we're playing Newbury Port, and we go up to Newburyport, and Newburyport's undefeated, we're undefeated, and Walmart Memorial's beautiful stadium, like a mini Mannenball up in Newburyport, I'm sure you've seen it. We get there early, and we get in there, and I figure, what is he going to say now? He's played off all. We get into the locker room, and we get in, and he comes out, and he says, now for the starting lineup of the greatest high school team in America. I'm ready to kill people, and so isn't everybody else. And then my senior year, we go in, after we had beat Newburyport, we go into Marblehead, and they're 3-5, we're 8-0, and it's 6-0 at halftime. And he did not give us pregame. He just said, okay, let's go get him. We get out there. We saved his pregame as a backup for halftime. He comes out, and he starts with, if my son could be half the man of any of you, and he'd take each senior and go through a personality thing, we were ready. We went out and scored 32 points in the third quarter and won 40-0. So he was just a great motivator, knew the buttons to push, and he was fabulous.
John, I want to follow up on one of the comments that you made a moment ago. Are you telling me that when you intercepted that pass, you ran the wrong way? Is that, no. Did I pick up on that?
No,
or not?
You did pick up on that, but I didn't. I ran my my mother and father were to the right on the sidelines watching, and they were parachute parents, and they were very happy I was dressing, let alone playing. I ran as quick as I could to my mother because my father would have had trouble with Ames Ray. My mother would have killed all of them. I did run the right way, but I ran to the sidelines.
All right. There you go. John Squire is with us. John, thanks so much. And we'll follow up on these topics and more as we go through here. But thanks so much for this insight into really Swampscott's glory days, in particular, Coach Stan Bondelevich.
Thanks a lot, Billy.
John Squire is with us. I'm Bill Newell here on MSO, newsports.com.